What's going on, people, and welcome back to the Baby Fathers Podcast for another brand new episode. I'm your host, and I got my name of DJ Riddler. So before we start today's show, I need you to do me a big favor. Make sure you subscribe to the channel if you haven't subscribed to the channel yet. And don't forget to press the notification button, so anytime a new episode comes out, you're going to be the first to know, all right? So on today's show, we have another special guest, and he goes by the name of Jamie. How you doing, Jamie?
How we doing, mate?
I want to say thank you for coming on the Baby Fathers show today.
Thanks for having me.
What has brought you down to the Baby Fathers?
Well, it was, you had a guest on a little while ago by the name of Jamie as well. He's one of my pals. I helped him with his child arrangements orders.
All right, so I take it you have a story to tell us today.
Yeah.
And obviously share some knowledge as well.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
All right, so before we get into your story, I have to put a disclaimer out there.
Yeah.
All right. So anything what you say today is your truth, and it's your truth only. No one can't say anything different because it's how you understand it to be.
Right.
All right. So we're going to start from the beginning of your story. How many kids do you have?
I've got one.
How you and your mum obviously first met? How did that first start out?
Yeah, I met her in 2010. It was, my son was born in 2011. It was almost within an instant, as soon as he was born, things changed. But to be fair with you, I've got to be honest, like I was a completely different person back then. I weren't of the mindset I was now. I was a drug addict. Like I lived a very different life to what I live now. I was involved in drugs and that. What happened in 2013, I was indicted on a conspiracy charge. I was subsequently found not guilty, but it was from that's when the contact sort of was being used against me and that, and I felt like I didn't really have a leg to stand on. In 2013, I obtained my first contact order. I call them contact orders because that's what they was called then. They're called child arrangements orders now, but yeah, and I got my first one. Like, I had to make a choice ultimately, you know, what am I going to do, carry on living this life or build a, like, sort myself out to be there for my son? And that's what I chose to do.
Just before we move forward, you were talking about a typical lifestyle. What kind of lifestyle would you live in?
It was
in that time.
Like I say, I was involved in drugs. I've been involved in drugs since a young age, and it was all I knew up to that point. At 2013, I didn't really know nothing else. And I had to. It was either go one way or the other, and I wanted to go the way with my son, and that's what I'd done. I cleaned myself up, sorted myself out. At the start of 2013, I was a drug addict, but by the end of it, I wasn't. You know what I mean? Because I knew very quickly that I had to sort myself out. Like.
And how was you able to manage to clean yourself up?
Well, where I was on bail for the conspiracy charge, I got bailed to my mum and dad's address in Thurrock. And I think that was a massive help to it because it removed me from the lifestyle I was living in Dagenham to another place where I weren't around the same people. I think it would have been a lot harder, if not impossible, if I'd have stayed in Dagenham.
When your child came, he was also taking drugs at that same time still?
Yeah. I've been taking hard drugs for a long time before my son was there. It was mainly cocaine. Well, it was cocaine, but yeah, it was just like I started off on the weekend and that, in my early 20s, and then you get involved in doing bits for other people and that, and then start using it more and more. Then when it's there all the time, I can remember I didn't even realise I had a problem. And people were saying to me, Jamie, you got to sort yourself out. And this is well before my boy was there. I was thinking, I'm all right. But you just can't see it I couldn't see it anyway. But
and then when you met the mother, how was that at the time?
At the time, I wouldn't have said I was at my worst of my addiction then. But it weren't a good relationship. Like, we was only together a month before she fell pregnant.
Okay.
So we didn't really know each other. And during the pregnancy, everything was fine and that. But like I said, it was once my boy was here, it felt like within a couple of days, this woman I'd had the baby with, she changed.
And what kind of things?
Right, it was just like as if she knew that because the baby was here now that, it was like she knew she had a sort of control over me. You know what I mean? It was that.
And what kind of things was she saying? You can see the charge, you can't see the charge, is it money?
Well, at first it was just like my contact sort of deteriorated, and I realised I'm not seeing him. And if I wanted something to happen, it wouldn't happen. But at that time, I agree with her because of just the state of mind I was in. But I remember once I started cleaning myself up, then after 2013, I was clean.
So she was safeguarding your son at the time?
Yeah.
All right. So you've gone to rehab, cleaned yourself up. Once you've done that, what happened after that?
2014. I think 2014 was all right. It was in 2015 I had a breakdown. Well, 2014 weren't all right. I got nicked for a cannabis grand 2014, and that was sort of like held against me to a degree, like, you know what I mean? But 2015 I had a breakdown, and then because of my mental health, it spawns back from sleep deprivation. I've never been a good sleeper. And what I was doing, because of the gear didn't help it, like, I'd stay awake for 2 days at a time. Then after a couple of months of doing that, I'd stay awake for 3 days at a time. In 2015, it got to the point where I'm staying awake for 5 days at a time. And I assure you, even you or anyone watching it, if you're awake for 5 days at a time, on that fifth day, you're not the same person you were on the first day. You're off your head.
More time after 24 hours, you're not the same.
Yeah, like, honestly. But to her, it weren't mental health. She was saying, oh, he's using drugs again, which I weren't at the time. It was sleep deprivation, and it escalated into a psychotic episode. In, June, 2015, I got put on a mental health order, and I had to keep on applying back for the courts, going through the courts again to re-establish contact. But I think that's a mistake I was making. At the time, I thought I was enforcing the order by filling in another C100 and going back to the court. But I sort of get the impression now that that's not the right thing to do. What I should have done for was gone for an enforcement order of the contact order, and then, you know what I mean, there would have been...
If we go back to the beginning of the court stages,
yeah.
Did you do mediation first?
No, the mediation, because I tell you a lie, we did do mediation, I think it was on the second time. The second time I went for a contact order, we had mediation. We done one in parenting courses and that. To be honest, I didn't really think mediation was so much effective for us two. I'm not saying it ain't effective for other people. I know it's effective for other people, but just for us two, it weren't, because it was a very toxic relationship, like, and we weren't very nice to each other. It was like one of them ones.
Yeah. So the first time you went court, what was that for?
The first one was to get contact. Contact had stopped. It had come to a halt. And I think I went about 3 months or something with, like, no contact with me boy. And I thought, right, enough's enough. I'm going to put the application in. In that first one, she didn't really use me drug addiction against me. Like I said, I was coming off the drugs at that time. And she knew that, and she didn't use it against me. But it was in the 2015 one. That's when she used it against me, when I had the psychotic episode. And she went, he ain't mental, he's back on the drugs. And I had to do a drugs test. That court application, that was the one that took a bit of time, like, because I had to go and do the air strand test and come back and X, Y, and Z. But see, this is another thing I've just remembered. Me and my baby mum, we had some proper, like, arguments in the court where they've had to call in security. This is what I mean when I'm saying how bad it was between me and her. It was so volatile, and, like, we weren't right for each other at all. We probably weren't right for each other. But, yeah, and it, like, that first one, that took, I can't remember all the details of it, but that probably took a while for it to, for the court to settle that, because of the way me and my baby mum was behaving. Yeah. Like, both of us, like, you know what I mean, screaming at each other. Inside the courtroom, the judge is calling security. That's putting a stop to the whole thing there and then, do you know what I mean? She's both just not acting reasonably.
When that happened, did they ever grant you to see your son on that first one?
No. You had to go through the process, like the safeguarding, the CAFCAS safeguarding. Okay. Yeah, they had to do all that. The process is still the same as what it was back then, to be honest. But
so the second time?
Second one, I think that was just for, like, saying I'm reasonable. The problem I had with my baby mum was that if I didn't do what she said, then that was a problem. Like, you know what I mean? And it got to the point, a lot of the times I allowed it because I thought, I don't want to keep on going back to court, you know? Like, why would you want to? But it got to the point where you had to. So then the second one, I've gone and done the process again. I think that would have been like a year later. Then in 2015, I had the mental breakdown, and that was a problem, that one, because I'm on a mental health order. That was used against me, like. But again, the mental health team helped me out, like, then they they give me a letter, took that to court, and they were saying, look, think it's like it's not good for him, the father, to not be seeing his son when that's a source of like joy for him. Mm. Words to that effect, like I would have said. But again, in 2015, jumped through all the hoops and that. Like, I was on the mental health order. As soon as I was taking the antipsychotic medication, it sorted me out like that. Within 2 weeks, I was sweet. Mm. But yeah, contact was reestablished.
So you was able to see him?
Yeah.
And how long did that last for?
That would have lasted until something unreasonable would have happened again, until like she would have made an unreasonable demand, or I would have asked for something and it would have escalated into a rare and contact would have stopped. That was the thing. If we had a rare, contact would stop.
Sure. Yeah. And what was the argument you would usually be about?
A variety of things, load of things. Like money a lot of the time. Mainly money, but I've always paid me well now, and you know what I mean?
How many times have you been caught?
Altogether, six times, like six contact orders. Like I say, I think my mistake was not applying for an enforcement order, maybe after the second or third time. What I kept on doing, I kept on reapplying for a C-100 when I should have been applying for the C-79, which is the enforcement of the order. That's what I believe.
Anyway. And what's the two difference between the both of these forms?
Well, the enforcement order, it's like... the enforcement order, they're going to come down. From what it looks like to me, that's when, if you breach a court order, it's contempt of court, isn't it? Mm. But however, in family law, it ain't the same as like breaching a non-molestation order. Yeah. I know that's still family law, well, it can be, but like, it ain't the same as that, because if the resident parent breaches the order, the court ain't going to say, look, you've breached this order, that's contempt of court, go to jail for 2 weeks, because that's just going to cause uproar for the child.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? All the family court is concerned with is the welfare of the child. That's what the Children Act's all about. It's the welfare principle. Yeah, and the enforcement order, from what I can see, is like, right, you've breached the order. Now there's an enforcement order onto it. Then I believe the court will say that if you breach it the next time, there's going to be some sort of punishment, which can, you know what I mean, unpaid work, a fine. It says prison there, but like I say, I've never, ever heard of a resident parent being sent to prison for breaching a contact order. I wouldn't like that to happen. You know?
Yeah. When you got to the last one, the sixth case, what happened in that case?
Again, that was more just to vary the order than anything else, and there was a few issues there that I don't really want to go into, but by the sixth time, it was as if, like, it was very easy for me. It weren't no drama, or it was very easy for me to, with the process and that, with all the stages, and I was thinking, right, I know what to do now. My statement, it was in line with the welfare checklist in the Children's Act, you know what I mean? Yeah. Everything was about the welfare of my son. And, again, I had no issues. In fact, the sixth time, the last time I went there, it was probably, it's not enjoyable, but it was, like, the easiest. There was no drama with it.
Would you say that the court system is fair to fathers or not fair to fathers?
I think, see, if you'd have asked me that after the first or second time, if I'd have come here after the first or second time I've been to court, I probably would have had a different answer. I said, yeah, it's unfair, it's against the fathers and that. And when you take everything into consideration, like the Children's Act, the court's only concerned with the welfare of the child, not concerned about your right as a father. Like, even though, yeah, right, you've got a right as a father, you've got parental responsibility, but that parental responsibility is, how could I put it? Like, a right is a right, yeah? So when you get nicked at a police station, you've got a right to a phone call. If you go in that police station kicking and screaming, you've still got the right to that phone call. Remember, if you go in family court, you've got a right to see your kids. Remember, if you go in family court kicking and screaming, your right ain't going to be upheld to see your kids, because you're not acting in a way that's consistent with the welfare of that child, you know?
Did you have someone representing you after the first time, or did you represent yourself after?
It was me representing
myself. And how did you go about doing all that?
You just look it all up. I was trying to find as much information as I could online. In 2020, I enrolled for a law degree with the Open University. And what happened with that, when you, as a law student, you've got access to a legal database. That makes things a lot easier, because there's things on there that ain't on Google.
Okay. So how's the relationship between you and her?
It's non-existent. We don't talk like, we don't.
So how do you do the communication with the child?
Well, he lives with his nan. He's always lived with his nan, but we just there's no communication between me and her.
So do you have access to see him now?
Yeah, I see him. Like I say, that's another thing. Where he's 12 years old now, he's got his own head. He's got his own mind in his head. Like, do you know what I mean? I think it'll be. I don't think anybody could stop contact for any unreasonable like excuse. You know what I mean? If it was something really petty, and my boy would turn around and say, "No, I'm going to see my dad."
So, what age did you get to see him? When you got to the six hearing?
That sixth hearing, it was only last year, but that sixth case, it was only last year. But contact had been rather consistent over the last, I'd say, 6 years or something.
Okay,
maybe since about 6 years, it had been consistent. Like,
so now you get access to see your son. How often do you see him?
It's always been a weekend thing with me and my son. He stays over there. Like, most weekends, I've got him all weekend. Like, we go and do mad things. Like, we always go to that Comic Con and like things like that, events around London. A few years ago, we was going to him. He was mad about them Lego brick festivals. Like, but we've always had good contact. We've got a really good relationship now. He's like my little psychic whenever I take him out. Yeah. Like, he's a But he's 12 now, he's getting old, he wants to do his own thing, like, do you know what I mean? But that's how it is.
And what kind of morals do you go by, what you're teaching him?
I want him to be a good dad. I believe that, you know what I mean, even though I've had a lot of hiccups and that and flaws, in my art of arts, I know I'm a good dad. I'm a good dad because I was raised by a good dad. And that's what I want to instill into him, like, you know, I want him to know. I tell him about it now, like, when I say you don't want to have a kid too young, like, because, like, you know what I mean? Go sort yourself out first, get your 20s out of the way and that. And I think he's got into him, like a lot of the kids, I've taught him, because I used to be an addict myself, I've taught him a lot of things that sounds terrible, but if you'd listen, like, I've warned him about substances. Now, he's 12, all the kids in his class, in his year and that, they're all smoking them vapes.
Yeah.
He's not, though. And, like, I'm very confident, something might change, but I'm very confident at this point that he's going to keep that with him, like, you know what I mean? And
that's just because you're able to school him.
Yeah, and that's what I'm doing. I'm proper, like, he knows where things have gone wrong, like, and you know.
And what would you expect him to be, maybe, where you would like to see him in the next 10, 15 years?
As long as he's not abusing substances and he's just doing well, then I will interpret that as a success, like, for me. Like I say, in like them working class areas, everyone's on drugs, and there's a lot of drug use, isn't there, and substance misuse and that. And that's my biggest fear for him. That really is my biggest fear, that he'll fall into that, and just keeping him away from that, you know.
And how are you just doing that? Just by speaking of him from time to time?
Just speaking for him from time to time. I like I say to him, well, which of your mates have got to run the vapes then? But he's in his little circle. None of them are using the vapes. But I've seen them come out of the school and that. Like, I've got nieces and nephews in the same school. And they tell me about all the kids in there using them vapes and that. It's terrible, man.
It's worse than cigarettes now, isn't it?
Yeah, you see it everywhere, and all the young kids, like, and they're just sitting there puffing. I think, bloody hell, I used to do that with cigarettes, like. You think you just look stupid, don't you?
Yeah.
You don't realise it at the time.
I think some of them do it because they're just trying to fit in. And how's his relationship with his mum?
Yeah, it's all right. Like I say, I don't really talk to her, so I wouldn't really know, but from what he says, it's all right.
Obviously, you mentioned about you help fathers in the court with the McKenzie Friends. How did that all come about?
Well, as I say, when I enrolled for the law degree, we'd done this unit. It was on the reason why the Legal Aid got the cuts. It was called the Legal Aid Sentencing and Punishment of Offenders Act. It was a law that came out in 2012, and that's basically the catalyst that caused all the Legal Aid, all the Legal Aid cuts. And we was learning about that, and a little bit come on about McKenzie Friends and that. From what I was looking at, I found a little bit about McKenzie Friends in the family courts and that. Then I started seeing that there was McKenzie Friend companies that were charging money, like £60 an hour and that. And then I thought, hang on a minute, like. So then I started my company, Arm Prevention, and that's what I was intending to do at first, charge people for the McKenzie Friend service. But then as the company evolved, I thought, I was talking to people who really didn't, it didn't have money, like, and I felt bad, like, you know what I mean? I'm not qualified anyway. If I was qualified, it'd be a different story, Ridley, you know what I mean? So I've gone through everything. I finished the degree, done the SQE course, become a solicitor. It'd be a different story, but I'm not qualified. So I just didn't really feel comfortable charging people. And then a lot of people who was contacting me, they was asking me to be a McKenzie friend. Then I started saying to them, do you really need me to be your McKenzie friend? Because you sound quite confident, right? And then it turned into me egging people on to go and do it themselves. And now it's only been since September, there's only been about three people I've been a McKenzie friend for.
And the people who hasn't yet to McKenzie friend for, how many numbers would you say?
Oh, since I've started that company, I've probably no more than 20 people. And everyone I've helped so far, they've had a good result. But in saying that, I've not had no one with any like serious issues. Like when I say serious issues, like I'm saying, what if there's any like dark stuff that's gone on in the background previously? Seeing that type of a case, if someone comes to me and said, "Oh yeah, look, I've got this history. Like I done X, Y, and Z to her like 5 years ago," I'd say, "Look, this is a bit too much for me. Right, go and get some proper legal."
So, are you picky and choosy what you want, what you would take on to what you won't take on?
Well, I haven't had no one approach me in that situation yet. But I'm saying, if there was, I probably would say to them, like, you know what I mean, you're gonna need some proper expert.
So, what kind of things would you avoid if someone came to you? What kind of be the things you wouldn't want to touch on?
Well, like domestic abuse, for a start, if someone comes to me and they had an history of domestic abuse, well, you can get legal aid for that. That's what I'd say. Go and get the legal aid, like, get a professional. But, like, with the fathers, I've had a couple of mums ask me for help as well. It ain't all been fathers, but there's been a couple of mums there as well. But the majority is fathers. Some of them are just pure nervous. They've never been in a courtroom setting before. They don't know what to expect. They have trouble filling in the forms. They don't know how to set their statement out. And I help them with that, like, and then I sort of prepare them. They say, "Oh, what if this happens? What if that happens?" And I say, "Look, X, Y, and Z." Or if a mother's putting a false allegation against them, I say to them, like, let the false allegation work its way out. There's a process where if you're in court and you put out a false allegation, there's a process that the court's got to follow. The court's got to work out, is that a false allegation or is it the truth? And let the court do that. If it's a false allegation, you ain't got nothing to worry about. I've had false allegations by my baby mum. The false allegations for mine were like what I consider the nice kinds. Like, "Oh, he's been taking drugs again." Well, no, I ain't. Go on, look, I'll prove it to you. You know what I mean? I'll jump through the, "There you go, I haven't been taking drugs, you're wrong." But Some of the allegations, but that some of these dads have had, like, they're terrible, terrible things, like, you know, like, just dark shit, like.
And obviously they've bust the case.
Yeah, you know, bust it because like I had one bloke on the phone to me. He was sobbing, like, "What if the courts believe it? I'm never going to see my kid again." I'm saying, "Look, you told me it's not true. You know, there's no police reports, no hospital reports. Go there and like challenge her on that allegation." And he'd done that, and boom, it was all.
So is it, so that's done through the fact finding?
Yeah, fact finding.
Okay. And obviously, by you doing this, from your experience, you've now obviously able to help other fathers.
Yeah.
What would be your next step by doing this?
Well, what I ultimately want to do is I want to finish my law degree and then I want to do the SQE. That's like the test of the exam for the solicitors. But because I've got a criminal record and that ain't, there's a chance that I might not get that. But I ain't going to let that stop me until it stops me. Do you know what I mean? But this with my company, Arm Prevention, I'm happy with it at the minute where it is. You know what I mean? I know it's a free service and that at the minute, but it's just I get a nice feeling from it.
If you had any advice to any fathers who's at the stage of not seeing a child or maybe going to court or who's thinking about going to court, what would you like to say to them?
In your statement, stick to the facts. Don't put in any false allegations in there. Don't put your opinions in there, what you think of the mother. Don't put any, or if it's the opposite, mother against the father, the mother being the applicant, father being respondent. Just don't use any false allegations. Don't use any aggression. Like that thing you said about the father's right, like, think about that. If you look at the Children Act, the parental responsibility, yeah, you've got the right to be a parent, but the Children's Act's all about the welfare of the child. So it isn't, to me, like, people will disagree with me on that, but it isn't really a father's right, it's a child's right. But then that child's right entails that parent being a good, decent parent and not being a div, like, do you know what I mean? remain calm. Don't lie. Don't try and gloss anything over. If you've done something wrong, then own it. You know what I mean? Own it and tell them, look, I've done this, but I've seen the errors of my way, X, Y, and Z. If there is anybody out there who's really struggling, you know, get in touch and whatever, you know. I'd help anyone. I'd help anyone. There's nobody I haven't turned away yet. Like,
yeah. And how can they find you?
Harmprevention.co.uk. You can send an email to info@harmprevention.co.uk. Find me on social medias. My name's Jamie Barnes. I used to make music under the name of Buffalo. I used to be a DJ, later, as we were saying. Yeah, that's it, really.
Yeah, I want to say, Jamie, I want to say thank you for coming and sharing your story, but also trying to help other fathers who may be going through that situation, obviously, where you're actually doing this for free, where you don't actually get paid for that.
Yeah.
So, respect to that. I want to hear your lot's views today in the comments below. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the channel and press the notifications. So anytime an episode comes out, you're going to be the first to know, all right? So for myself, DJ Riddler and Jamie, till next time, peace, and we out.